of the opening to my cell. My heart pumped hard and fast as I understood what the brothers were saying. Jared had won. I was not to be tortured. I was not to be killed. Not immediately, anyway. Jared was keeping me prisoner. It seemed a beautiful word, under the circumstances.
I told you he would protect us.
Don't make this difficult, Jared, said a new male voice I didn't recognize. It has to be done.
Jared said nothing.
We don't want to hurt you, Jared. We're all brothers here. But we will if you make us.
There was no bluff in Kyle's tone.
Move aside.
Jared stood rock still. My heart started thumping faster than before, jerking against my ribs so hard that the hammering disrupted the rhythm of my lungs, made it difficult to breathe. Melanie was incapacitated with fear, unable to think in coherent words. They were going to hurt him. Those lunatic humans were going to attack one of their own.
Jared, please, Ian said.
Jared didn't answer. A heavy footfall, a lunge, and the sound of something heavy hitting something solid, a gasp, a choking gurgle. No, I cried, and launched myself through the round hole. Chapter 16. Assigned. The ledge of the rock exit was worn down, but it scraped my palms and shins as I scrambled through it. It hurt, stiff as I was, to wrench myself erect, and my breath caught. My head swam as the blood flowed downward. I looked for only one thing, where Jared was, so that I could put myself between him and his attackers. They all stood frozen in place, staring at me. Jared had his back to the wall, his hands balled into fists and held low. In front of him, Kyle was hunched over, clutching his stomach. Ian and a stranger flanked him a few feet back, their mouths open with shock. I took advantage of their surprise. In two long, shaky strides, I moved between Kyle and Jared. Kyle was the first to react. I was less than a foot from him, and his primary instinct was to shove me away. His hand struck my shoulder and heaved me toward the floor. Before I could fall, something caught my wrist and yanked me back to my feet. As soon as he realized what he'd done, Jared dropped my wrist as if my skin were oozing acid.
"Get back in there!" he roared at me.
He shoved my shoulder too, but it wasn't as hard as Kyle's push. It sent me staggering 2 feet back toward the hole in the wall. The hole was a black circle in the narrow hallway. Outside the small prison, the bigger cave looked just the same, only longer and taller, a tube rather than a bubble. A small lamp, powered by what I couldn't guess, lit the hallway dimly from the ground. It cast strange shadows on the features of the men, turning them into scowling monster faces. I took a step toward them again, turning my back on Jared.
"I'm what you want," I said directly to Kyle. "Leave him alone."
No one said anything for a long second.
"Tricky bugger,"
Ian finally muttered, eyes wide with horror.
"I said get back in there," Jared hissed behind me.
I turned halfway, not wanting Kyle out of my sight.
"It's not your duty to protect me at your own expense."
Jared grimaced, one hand rising to push me back toward the cell again. I skipped out of the way. The motion moved me toward the ones who wanted to kill me. Ian grabbed my arms and pinned them behind me. I struggled instinctively, but he was very strong. He bent my joints too far back, and I gasped.
"Get your hands off her!"
Jared shouted, charging. Kyle caught him and spun him around into a wrestling hold, forcing his neck forward. The other man grabbed one of Jared's thrashing arms.
"Don't hurt him!" I screeched.
I strained against the hands that imprisoned me. Jared's free elbow rammed into Kyle's stomach. Kyle gasped and lost his grip. Jared twisted away from his attackers and then lunged back, his fist connecting with Kyle's nose. Dark red blood spattered the wall and the lamp.
"Finish it, Ian!"
Kyle yelled. He put his head down and hurtled into Jared, throwing him into the other man.
No! Jared and I cried at the same moment.
Ian dropped my arms and his hands wrapped around my throat, choking off my air. I clawed at his hands with my useless stubby nails. He gripped me tighter, dragging my feet off the floor. It hurt. The strangling hands, the sudden panic of my lungs. It was agony. I writhed, more trying to escape the pain than the murdering hands. Click, click. I'd only heard the sound once before, but I recognized it. So did everyone else. They all froze. Ian with his hands locked hard on my neck.
Kyle, Ian, Brant, back off! Jeb barked.
No one moved, just my hands still clawing and my feet twitching in the air. Jared suddenly darted under Kyle's motionless arm and sprang at me. I saw his fist flying toward my face and closed my eyes. A loud thwack sounded inches behind my head. Ian howled, and I dropped to the floor. I crumpled there at his feet, gasping. Jared retreated after an angry glance in my direction and went to stand at Jeb's elbow.
Your guest's here, boys. And don't forget it, Jeb growled. I told you not to go looking for the girl. She's my guest, too, for the moment, and I don't take kindly to any of my guests killing any of the others.
Jeb!
Ian moaned above me, his voice muffled by the hand held to his mouth.
Jeb, this is insane. What's your plan?
Kyle demanded. His face was smeared with blood, a violent, macabre sight. But there was no evidence of pain in his voice, only controlled and simmering anger.
We have a right to know. We have to decide whether this place is safe or if it's time to move on. So, how long will you keep this thing as your pet? What will you do with it when you're finished playing God? All of us deserve to know the answers to these questions.
Kyle's extraordinary words echoed behind the pulse thudding in my head. Keep me as a pet? Jeb had called me his guest. Was that another word for prisoner? Was it possible that two humans existed that did not demand either my death or my torture-wrung confession? If so, it was nothing less than a miracle.
Don't have your answers, Kyle,
Jeb said.
It's not up to me.
I doubted any other response Jeb could have given would have confused them more. All four men, Kyle, Ian, the one I didn't know, and even Jared, stared at him with shock. I still crouched, gasping at Ian's feet, wishing there was some way I could climb back into my hole unnoticed.
Not up to you,
Kyle finally echoed, still disbelieving.
Who then? If you're thinking of putting it to a vote, that's already been done. Ian Brant and I are the duly designated appointees of the result.
Jeb shook his head, a tight movement that never took his eyes off the man in front of him.
It's not up for a vote. This is still my house. Who then?
Kyle shouted. Jeb's eyes finally flickered to another face, and then back to Kyle.
It's Jared's decision.
Everyone, me included, shifted their eyes to stare at Jared. He gaped at Jeb, just as astonished as the rest, and then his teeth ground together with an audible sound. He threw a glare of pure hate in my direction.
Jared?
Kyle asked, facing Jeb again.
That makes no sense!
He was not in control of himself now, almost spluttering in rage.
He's more biased than anyone else! Why? How can he be rational about this?
Jeb, I don't...
Jared muttered.
She's your responsibility, Jared.
Jeb said in a firm voice.
I'll help you out, of course, if there's any more trouble like this, and with keeping track of her and all that. But when it comes to making decisions, that's all yours.
He raised one hand when Kyle tried to protest again.
Look at it this way, Kyle. If somebody found your Jody on a raid and brought her back here, would you want me or Doc or a vote
deciding what we did with her?
Jody is dead,
Kyle hissed, blood spraying off his lips. He glared at me with much the same expression Jared had just used.
Well, if her body wandered in here, it would still be up to you. Would you want it any other way?
The majority.
My house, my rules,
Jeb interrupted harshly.
No more discussion on this. No more votes. No more execution attempts. You three spread the word. This is how it works from now on. New rule.
Another one?
Ian muttered under his breath. Jeb ignored him.
If, unlikely as it may be, somehow this ever happens again, whoever the body belongs to makes the call.
Jeb poked the barrel of the gun toward Kyle, then jerked it a few inches toward the hall behind him.
Get out of here. I don't want to see you anywhere around this place again. You let everyone know that this corridor is off limits. No one's got any reason for being here except Jared. And if I catch someone skulking around, I'm asking questions second. You got that? Move, now.
He jabbed the gun at Kyle again. I was amazed that the three assassins immediately stalked back up the hallway, not even pausing to give me or Jeb a parting grimace. I deeply wanted to believe that the gun in Jeb's hands was a bluff. From the first time I'd seen him, Jeb had shown every outward appearance of kindness. He had not touched me once in violence. He had not even looked at me with recognizable hostility. Now it seemed that he was one of only two people here who meant me no harm. Jared might have fought to keep me alive, but it was plain that he was intensely conflicted about that decision. I sensed that he could change his mind at any time. From his expression, it was clear that part of him wanted this over with, especially now that Jeb had put the decision on his shoulders. While I made this analysis, Jared glowered at me with disgust in every line of his expression. However, as much as I wanted to believe that Jeb was bluffing while I watched the three men disappear into the darkness away from me, it was obvious there was no way he could be. Under the front he presented, Jeb must have been just as deadly and cruel as the rest of them. If he hadn't used that gun in the past, used it to kill, not just to threaten, no one would have obeyed him this way. Desperate times, Melanie whispered. We can't afford to be kind in the world you've created. We're fugitives, an endangered species. Every choice is life or death. Shh. I don't have time for a debate. I need to focus. Jared was facing Jeb now, one hand held out in front of him, palm up, fingers curled limply. Now that the others were gone, their bodies slumped into a looser stance. Jeb was even grinning under his thick beard, as though he'd enjoyed the standoff at gunpoint. Strange human.
Please don't put this on me, Jeb, Jared said. Kyle is right about one thing. I can't make a rational decision. No one said you had to decide this second. She's not going anywhere.
Jeb glanced down at me, still grinning. The eye closest to me, the one Jared couldn't see, closed quickly and opened again. A wink.
Not after all the trouble she took to get here. You've got plenty of time to think it through. There's nothing to think through. Melanie is dead. But I can't just...
Jared couldn't seem to finish the sentence. Tell him I'm not ready to die right this second.
Don't think about it then, Jeb told him. Maybe you'll figure something out later. Give it some time. What are we going to do with it? We can't keep watch on it round the clock.
Jeb shook his head.
That's exactly what we're going to have to do for a while. Things will calm down. Even Kyle can't preserve a murderous rage for more than a few weeks. A few weeks? We can't afford to play guard down here for a few weeks. We have other things...
I know, I know.
Jeb sighed.
I'll figure something out.
And that's only half the problem.
Jared looked at me again. A vein in his forehead pulsed.
Where do we keep it? It's not like we have a cell block.
Jeb smiled down at me.
You're not going to give us any trouble now, are you?
I stared at him mutely.
Jeb,
Jared muttered, upset.
Oh, don't worry about her. First of all, we'll keep an eye on her. Secondly, she'd never be able to find her way out of here. She'd wander around lost until she ran into somebody. Which leads us to number three. She's not that stupid.
He raised one thick white eyebrow at me.
You're not going to go looking for Kyle or the rest of them, are you? I don't think any of them are very fond of you.
I just stared, wary of his easy, chatty tone.
I wish you wouldn't talk to it like that, Jared muttered.
I was raised in a politer time, kid. I can't help myself.
Jeb put one hand on Jared's arm, patting lightly.
Look, you've had a full night. Let me take the next watch here. Get some sleep.
Jared seemed about to object, but then he looked at me again and his expression hardened.
Whatever you want, Jeb. And I won't accept responsibility for this thing. Kill it, if you think that's best.
I flinched. Jared scowled at my reaction, then turned his back abruptly and walked the same way the others had gone. Jeb watched him go. While he was distracted, I crept back into my hole. I heard Jeb settle slowly to the ground beside the opening. He sighed and stretched, popping a few joints. After a few minutes, he started whistling quietly. It was a cheery tune. I curled myself around my bent knees, pressing my back into the farthest recess of the little cell. Tremors started at the small of my back and ran up and down my spine. My hands shook, and my teeth chattered softly together, despite the soggy heat.
"Might as well lie down and get some sleep," Jeb said.
Whether to me or to himself, I wasn't sure.
"Tomorrow's bound to be a tough one."
The shivers passed after a time, maybe half an hour. When they were gone, I felt exhausted. I decided to take Jeb's advice. Though the floor felt even more uncomfortable than before, I was unconscious in seconds. The smell of food woke me. This time I was groggy and disoriented when I opened my eyes. An instinctive sense of panic had my hands trembling again before I was fully conscious. The same tray sat on the ground beside me, identical offerings on it. I could both see and hear Jeb. He sat in front of the cave in profile, looking straight ahead down the long, round corridor and whistling softly. Driven by my fierce thirst, I sat up and grabbed the open bottle of water.
"Morning,"
Jeb said, nodding in my direction. I froze, my hand on the bottle, until he turned his head and started whistling again. Only now, not quite so desperately thirsty as before, did I notice the odd, unpleasant aftertaste to the water. It matched the acrid taste of the air, but it was slightly stronger. The tang lingered in my mouth, inescapable. I ate quickly, this time saving the soup for last. My stomach reacted more happily today, accepting the food with better grace. It barely gurgled. My body had other needs, though, now that the loudest ones had been sated. I looked around my dark, cramped hole. There weren't a lot of options visible. But I could barely contain my fear at the thought of speaking up and making a request, even of the bizarre but friendly Jeb. I rocked back and forth, debating. My hips ached from curving to the bold shape of the cave.
"Ahem,"
Jeb said. He was looking at me again, his face a deeper color under the white hair than usual.
"You've been stuck in here for a while," he said. "You need to get out?"
I nodded.
Don't mind a walk myself.
His voice was cheerful. He sprang to his feet with surprising agility. I crawled to the edge of my hole, staring out at him cautiously.
I'll show you our little washroom, he continued. Now you should know that we're going to have to go through kind of the main plaza, so to speak. Don't worry. I think everyone will have gotten the message by now.
Unconsciously, he stroked the length of his gun. I tried to swallow. My bladder was so full it was a constant pain, impossible to ignore. But to parade right through the middle of the hive of angry killers? Couldn't he just bring me a bucket? He measured the panic in my eyes, watched the way I automatically shrank back farther into the hole, and his lips pursed in speculation. Then he turned and started walking down the dark hall.
"Follow me,"
he called back, not looking to see if I obeyed. I had one vivid flash of Kyle finding me here alone and was after Jeb before a second passed, scrambling awkwardly through the opening and then hobbling along on my stiff legs as fast as I could to catch up. It felt both horrible and wonderful to stand straight again. The pain was sharp, but the relief was greater. I was close behind him when we reached the end of the hall. Darkness loomed through the tall, broken oval of the exit. I hesitated, looking back at the small lamp he'd left on the floor. It was the only light in the dark cave. Was I supposed to bring it? He heard me stop and turned to peer at me over his shoulder. I nodded toward the light, then looked back at him.
Leave it. I know my way.
He held out his free hand to me.
I'll guide you.
I stared at the hand for a long moment, and then, feeling the urgency in my bladder, I slowly put my hand on his palm, barely touching it, the way I would have touched a snake, if for some reason I was ever forced to. Jeb led me through the blackness with sure, quick steps. The long tunnel was followed by a series of bewildering twists in opposing directions. As we rounded yet another sharp V in the path, I knew I was hopelessly turned around. I was sure this was on purpose, and the reason Jeb had left the lamp behind. He wouldn't want me knowing too much about how to find my way out of this labyrinth. I was curious as to how this place had come to be, how Jeb had found it, and how the others had wound up here. But I forced my lips tightly together. It seemed to me that keeping silent was my best bet now. What I was hoping for, I wasn't sure. A few more days of life? Just a cessation of pain? Was there anything else left? All I knew was that I wasn't ready to die, as I'd told Melanie before. My survival instinct was every bit as developed as the average human's. We turned another corner and the first light reached us. Ahead, a tall, narrow crevice glowed with light from another room. This light was not artificial like the little lamp by my cave. It was too white, too pure. We couldn't move through the narrow fracture in the rock side by side. Jeb went first, towing me close behind. Once through and able to see again, I pulled my hand out of Jeb's light grip. He didn't react in any way except to put his newly freed hand back on the gun. We were in a short tunnel, and a brighter light shone through a rough arched doorway. The walls were the same holy purple rock. I could hear voices now. They were low, less urgent than the last time I'd heard the babble of a human crowd. No one was expecting us today. I could only imagine what the response would be to my appearance with Jeb. My palms were cold and wet. My breath came in shallow gasps. I leaned as close as I could to Jeb without actually touching him.
"Easy," he murmured, not turning. "They're more afraid of you than you are of them."
I doubted that. And even if there were any way that it could be true, fear turned into hatred and violence in the human heart.
"I won't let anybody hurt you," Jeb mumbled as he reached the archway. "Anyway, might as well get used to this."
I wanted to ask what that meant, but he stepped through into the next room. I crept in after him, half a step behind, keeping myself hidden by his body as much as possible. The only thing harder than moving myself forward into that room was the thought of falling behind Jeb and being caught alone here. Sudden silence greeted our entrance. We were in the gigantic, bright cavern again, the one they'd first brought me to. How long ago was that? I had no idea. The ceiling was still too bright for me to make out exactly how it was lit. I hadn't noticed before, but the walls were not unbroken. Dozens of irregular gaps opened to adjoining tunnels. Some of the openings were huge, others barely large enough for a man to fit through stooped over. Some were natural crevices, others were, if not man-made, at least enhanced by someone's hands. Several people stared at us from the recesses of those crevices, frozen in the act of coming or going. More people were out in the open, their bodies caught in the middle of whatever movement our entrance had interrupted. One woman was bent in half, reaching for her shoelaces. A man's motionless arms hung in the air, raised to illustrate some point he'd been making to his companions. Another man wobbled, caught off balance in a sudden stop. His foot came down hard as he struggled to keep steady. The thud of its fall was the only sound in the vast space. It echoed through the room. It was fundamentally wrong for me to feel grateful to that hideous weapon in Jeb's hands, but I did. I knew that without it we would probably have been attacked. These humans would not stop themselves from hurting Jeb if it meant they could get to me. Though we might be attacked despite the gun, Jeb could only shoot one of them at a time. The picture in my head had turned so grisly that I couldn't bear it. I tried to focus on my immediate surroundings, which were bad enough. Jeb paused for a moment, the gun held at his waist, pointing outward. He stared all around the room, seeming to lock his gaze one by one with each person in it. There were fewer than 20 here. It did not take long. When he was satisfied with his study, he headed for the left wall of the cavern. Blood thudding in my ears, I followed in his shadow. He did not walk directly across the cavern, instead keeping close to the curve of the wall. I wondered at his path until I noticed a large square of darker ground that took up the center of the floor, a very large space. No one stood on this darker ground. I was too frightened to do more than notice the anomaly. I didn't even guess at a reason. There were small movements as we circled the silent room. The bending woman straightened, twisting at the waist to watch us go. The gesturing man folded his arms across his chest. All eyes narrowed, and all faces tightened into expressions of rage. However, no one moved toward us, and no one spoke. Whatever Kyle and the others had told these people about their confrontation with Jeb, it seemed to have had the effect Jeb was hoping for. As we passed through the grove of human statues, I recognized Sharon and Maggie eyeing us from the wide mouth of one opening. Their expressions were blank, their eyes cold. They did not look at me, only Jeb. He ignored them. It felt like years later when we finally reached the far side of the cavern. Jeb headed for a medium-sized exit, black against the brightness of this room. The eyes on my back made my scalp tingle, but I didn't dare to look behind me. The humans were still silent, but I worried that they might follow. It was a relief to slip into the darkness of the new passageway. Jeb's hand touched my elbow to guide me, and I did not shrink away from it. The babble of voices didn't pick up again behind us.
"That went better than I expected," Jeb muttered as he steered me through the cave.
His words surprised me, and I was glad I didn't know what he'd thought would happen. The ground sloped downward under my feet. Ahead, a dim light kept me from total blindness.
"Bet you've never seen anything like my place here."
Jeb's voice was louder now, back to the chatty tone he'd used before.
"It's really something, isn't it?"
He paused briefly in case I might respond, and then went on.
"Found this place back in the 70s. Well, it found me. I fell through the roof of the big room.
Probably should have died from the fall, but I'm too tough for my own good. Took me a while to find a way out. I was hungry enough to eat rock by the time I managed it. I was the only one left on the ranch by then, so I didn't have anyone to show it to. I explored every nook and cranny, and I could see the possibilities. I decided this might be a good card to keep up my sleeve, just in case. That's how we Striders are. We like to be prepared.
We passed the dim light. It came from a fist-sized hole in the ceiling, making a small circle of brightness on the floor. When it was behind us, I could see another spot of illumination far ahead.
You're probably curious as to how this all got here.
Another pause, shorter than the last.
I know I was. I did a little research. These are lava tubes. Can you beat that? This used to be a volcano. Well, still is a volcano, I expect. Not quite dead, as you'll see in a bit. All these caves and holes are bubbles of air that got caught in the cooling lava. I've put quite a bit of work into it over the last few decades. Some of it was easy. Connecting the tubes just took a little elbow grease. Other parts took more imagination. Did you see the ceiling in the big room? That took me years to get right.
I wanted to ask him how, but I couldn't bring myself to speak. Silence was safest. The floor began to slant downward at a steeper angle. The terrain was broken into rough steps, but they seemed secure enough. Jeb led me down them confidently. As we dropped lower and lower into the ground, the heat and humidity increased. I stiffened when I heard a babble of voices again, this time from ahead. Jeb patted my hand kindly.
"You'll like this part. It's always everyone's favorite," he promised.
A wide open arch shimmered with moving light. It was the same color as the light in the big room, pure and white, but it flickered at a strange, dancing pace. Like everything else that I couldn't understand in this cavern, the light frightened me.
"Here we are," Jeb said enthusiastically, pulling me through the archway. "What do you think?"
Chapter 17. Visited. The heat hit me first. Like a wall of steam, the moist, thick air rolled over me and dewed on my skin. My mouth opened automatically as I tried to pull a breath from the abruptly denser air. The smell was stronger than before, that same metallic tang that clung in my throat and flavored the water here. The murmuring babble of bass and soprano voices seemed to issue from every side, echoing off the walls. I squinted anxiously through the swirling cloud of moisture, trying to make out where the voices came from. It was bright here. The ceiling was dazzling, like in the big room, but much closer. The light danced off the vapor, creating a shimmering curtain that almost blinded me. My eyes struggled to adjust, and I clutched at Jeb's hand in panic. I was surprised that the strangely fluid babble did not respond in any way to our entrance. Perhaps they couldn't see us yet, either.
"It's a bit close in here," Jeb said apologetically, fanning at the steam in front of his face.
His voice was relaxed, conversational in tone and loud enough to make me jump. He spoke as if we were not surrounded. And the babble continued, oblivious to his voice.
"Not that I'm complaining," he continued. "I'd be dead several times over if this place didn't exist. The very first time I got stuck in the caves, of course. And now we'd never be able to hide out here without it. With no hiding place, we're all dead, right?"
He nudged me with his elbow, a conspiratorial gesture.
"Mighty convenient how it's laid out. Couldn't have planned it much better if I'd sculpted it myself out of Play-Doh."
His laugh cleared a section of mist, and I saw the room for the first time. Two rivers flowed through the dank, high-domed space. This was the chatter that filled my ears, the water gushing over and under the purple volcanic rock. Jeb spoke as if we were alone, because we were. It was really only one river and one small stream. The stream was closest, a shallow, braided ribbon of silver in the light from above, coursing between low stone banks that it seemed constantly in danger of overrunning. A feminine, high-pitched murmur purred from its gentle ripples. The male bass gurgle came from the river, as did the thick clouds of vapor that rose from the gaping holes in the ground by the far wall. The river was black, submerged under the floor of the cavern, exposed by wide, round erosions along the length of the room. The holes looked dark and dangerous, the river barely visible as it rushed powerfully toward an invisible and unfathomable destination. The water seemed to simmer, such was the heat and steam it produced. The sound of it, too, was like that of boiling water. From the ceiling hung a few long, narrow stalactites, dripping toward the stalagmites beneath each one. Three of them had met, forming thin black pillars between the two bodies of flowing water.
"Got to be careful in here," Jeb said. "Quite a current in the hot spring. If you fall in, you're gone. Happened once before."
He bowed his head at the memory, his face sober. The swift black eddies of the subterranean river were suddenly horrible to me. I imagined being caught in their scalding current and shuddered. Jeb put his hand lightly on my shoulder.
"Don't worry. Just watch your step and you'll be fine. Now,"
he said, pointing to the far end of the cavern where the shallow stream ran into a dark cave.
"The first cave back there is the bathing room. We've dug the floor out to make a nice deep tub. There's a schedule for taking baths, but privacy's not usually an issue. It's black as pitch back there. The room's nice and warm, so close to the steam here, but the water won't burn you like the hot spring here. There's another cave just past that one through a crevice. We've widened the entrance up to a comfortable size. That room is the farthest we can follow the stream. It drops underground there. So we've got that room fixed up as the latrine. Convenient and sanitary."
His voice had assumed a complacent tone, as if he felt credit was due to him for nature's creations. Well, he had discovered and improved the place. I supposed some pride was justified.
"We don't like to waste batteries, and most of us know the floor here by heart. But since it's your first time, you can find your way with this."
Jeb pulled a flashlight from his pocket and held it out. The sight of it reminded me of the moment he'd found me dying in the desert, when he'd checked my eyes and known what I was. I didn't know why the memory made me sad.
"Don't get any crazy ideas about maybe the river taking you out of here or something. Once that water goes underground, it doesn't come back up," he cautioned me.
Since he seemed to be waiting for some acknowledgement of his warning, I nodded once. I took the flashlight from his hand slowly, being careful not to make any quick movements that might startle him. He smiled in encouragement. I followed his directions quickly. The sound of the rushing water was not making my discomfort any easier to bear. It felt very strange to be out of his sight. What if someone had hidden in these caves, guessing I would have to come here eventually? Would Jeb hear the struggle over the cacophony of the rivers? I shone the flashlight all around the bathing room, looking for any sign of an ambush. The odd flickering shadows it made were not comforting, but I found no substance to my fears. Jeb's tub was more the size of a small swimming pool and black as ink. Under the surface, a person would be invisible as long as they could hold their breath. I hurried through the slender crack at the back of the room to escape my imaginings. Away from Jeb, I was nearly overwhelmed with panic. I couldn't breathe normally. I could barely hear over the sound of my pulse racing behind my ears. I was more running than walking when I made my way back to the room with the rivers. To find Jeb standing there, still in the same pose, still alone, was like a balm to my splintered nerves. My breathing and my heartbeat slowed. Why this crazy human should be such a comfort to me, I couldn't understand. I supposed it was like Melanie had said. Desperate times.
Not too shabby, eh?
He asked, a grin of pride on his face. I nodded once again and returned the flashlight.
These caves are a great gift,
he said as we started back toward the dark passageway.
We wouldn't be able to survive in a group like this without them. Magnolia and Sharon were getting along real well, shockingly well, up there in Chicago. But they were pushing their luck, hiding too. It's mighty nice to have a community again. It makes me feel downright human.
He took my elbow once more as we climbed the rough staircase out.
I'm sorry about the, accommodations we've got you in. It was the safest place I could think of. I'm surprised those boys found you as quick as they did.
Jeb sighed.
Well, Kyle gets real motivated. But I suppose it's all for the best. Might as well get used to how things are going to be. Maybe we can find something more hospitable for you. I'll think on it. While I'm with you, at least, you don't really have to cram yourself into that little hole. You can sit in the hall with me if you prefer. Though, with Jared...
He trailed off. I listened to his apologetic words in wonder. This was so much more kindness than I'd hoped for, more compassion than I'd thought this species was capable of giving their enemies. I patted the hand on my elbow lightly, hesitantly, trying to convey that I understood and wouldn't cause a problem. I was sure Jared much preferred to have me out of sight. Jeb had no trouble translating my wordless communication.
That's a good girl, he said. We'll figure this all out somehow. Doc can just concentrate on healing human folks. You're much more interesting alive, I think.
Our bodies were close enough that he was able to feel me tremble.
Don't worry. Doc's not going to bother you now.
I couldn't stop shivering. Jeb could only promise me now. There was no guarantee that Jared would not decide my secret was more important than protecting Melanie's body. I knew that such a fate would make me wish Ian had succeeded last night. I swallowed, feeling the bruising that seemed to go all the way through my neck to the inside walls of my throat. You never know how much time you'll have, Melanie had said so many days ago, when my world was still under control. Her words echoed in my head as we re-entered the big room, the main plaza of Jeb's human community. It was full, like the first night, everyone there to glare at us with eyes that blazed anger and betrayal when they looked at him, and murder when they looked at me. I kept my gaze down on the rock under my feet. From the corner of my eye, I could see that Jeb held his gun ready again. It was only a matter of time, indeed. I could feel it in the atmosphere of hate and fear. Jeb could not protect me long. It was a relief to scrape back through the narrow crevice, to look forward to the winding black labyrinth and my cramped hiding place. I could hope to be alone there. Behind me, a furious hissing, like a nest of goaded snakes, echoed in the big cavern. The sound made me wish Jeb would lead me through the labyrinth at a quicker pace. Jeb chuckled under his breath. He seemed to get stranger the longer I was around him. His sense of humor mystified me as much as his motivations did.
It gets a bit tedious down here sometimes, you know,
he murmured to me, or to himself. With Jeb, it was hard to tell.
Maybe when they get over being cheesed off at me, they'll realize they appreciate all the excitement I'm providing.
Our path through the dark twisted in a serpentine fashion. It didn't feel at all familiar. Perhaps he took a different route to keep me lost. It seemed to take more time than before, but finally I could see the dim blue light of the lamp shining from around the next curve. I braced myself, wondering if Jared would be there again. If he was,
I knew he would be angry. I was sure he wouldn't approve of Jeb taking me for a field trip, no matter how necessary it might have been. As soon as we rounded the corner, I could see that there was a figure slumped against the wall beside the lamp, casting a long shadow toward us, but it was obviously not Jared. My hand clutched at Jeb's arm, an automatic spasm of fear. And then I really looked at the waiting figure. It was smaller than me. That was how I'd known it was not Jared. And thin. Small, but also too tall and too wiry. Even in the dim light of the blue lamp, I could see that his skin was dyed to a deep brown by the sun, and that his silky black hair now fell unkempt past his chin. My knees buckled. My hand, grasping Jeb's arm in panic, held on for support.
"Well, for Pete's sake,"
Jeb exclaimed, obviously irritated.
"Can't nobody keep a secret around this place for more than 24 hours? Gol darn, this burns me up! Bunch of gossip mongers!"
He trailed off into a grumble. I didn't even try to understand the words Jeb was saying. I was locked in the fiercest battle of my life, of every life I'd ever lived. I could feel Melanie in each cell of my body. My nerve endings tingled in recognition of her familiar presence. My muscles twitched in anticipation of her direction. My lips trembled, trying to open. I leaned forward toward the boy in the hall, my body reaching because my arms would not. Melanie had learned many things the few times I'd ceded or lost my command to her, and I truly had to struggle against her, so hard that fresh sweat beaded on my brow. But I was not dying in the desert now, nor was I weak and dizzy and taken off guard by the appearance of someone I'd given up for lost. I'd known this moment might come. My body was resilient, quick to heal. I was strong again. The strength of my body gave strength to my control, to my determination. I drove her from my limbs, chased her from every hold she'd found, thrust her back into the recesses of my mind, and chained her there. Her surrender was sudden and total. "Ah!" she sighed, and it was almost a moan of pain. I felt strangely guilty as soon as I'd won. I'd already known that she was more to me than a resistant host who made life unnecessarily difficult. We'd become companions, even confidants, during our past weeks together, ever since the Seeker had united us against a common enemy. In the desert, with Kyle's knife over my head, I'd been glad that if I had to die, I would not be the one to kill Melanie. Even then, she was more than a body to me. But now it seemed like something beyond that. I regretted causing her pain. It was necessary, though, and she didn't seem to grasp that. Any word we said wrong, any poorly considered action, would mean a quick execution. Her reactions were too wild and emotional. She would get us into trouble. "You have to trust me now," I told her. "I'm just trying to keep us alive. I know you don't want to believe your humans could hurt us."
"But it's Jamie,"
she whispered. She yearned for the boy with an emotion so strong that it weakened my knees again. I tried to look at him impartially. This sullen-faced teenager slumped against the tunnel wall with his arms folded tightly across his chest. I tried to see him as a stranger and plan my response, or lack of response, accordingly. I tried, but I failed.
"He was Jamie. He was beautiful.
And my arms, mine, not Melanie's, longed to hold him." Tears filled my eyes and trickled down my face. I could only hope they were invisible in the dim light.
"Jeb," Jamie said, a gruff greeting. His eyes passed swiftly over me and away.
His voice was so deep. Could he really be so old?
I realized with a double pang of guilt that I'd just missed his 14th birthday. Melanie showed me the day, and I saw that it was the same day as the first dream with Jamie. She'd struggled so hard all day to keep her pain to herself,
to cloud her memories in order to protect the boy that he'd come out in her dream. And I'd emailed the Seeker. I shuddered now in disbelief that I'd ever been so callous.
"What you doing here, kid?"
Jeb demanded.
"Why didn't you tell me?"
Jamie demanded back. Jeb went silent.
"Was that Jared's idea?"
Jamie pressed. Jeb sighed.
"Okay, so you know. What good does that do you, eh? We only wanted to protect me,"
he interrupted surly. When did he get so bitter? Was it my fault? Of course it was. Melanie began sobbing in my head. It was distracting, loud. It made Jeb and Jamie's voices sound farther away.
"Fine, Jamie. So you don't need protecting. What do you want?"
This quick capitulation seemed to throw Jamie off. His eyes darted between Jeb's face and mine while he struggled to come up with a request.
I want to talk with her. With it, he finally said.
His voice was higher when he was unsure.
"She doesn't say much,"
Jeb told him.
"But you're welcome to try, kid."
Jeb pried my fingers off his arm. When he was free, he turned his back to the nearest wall, leaning into it as he eased himself to the floor. He settled in there, fidgeting until he found a comfortable position. The gun stayed balanced in the cradle of his lap. Jeb's head lolled back against the wall and his eyes closed. In seconds, he looked like he was asleep. I stood where he'd left me, trying to keep my eyes off Jamie's face and failing. Jamie was surprised again by Jeb's easy acquiescence. He watched the old man recline on the floor with wide eyes that made him look younger. After a few minutes of perfect stillness from Jeb, Jamie looked back up at me, and his eyes tightened. The way he stared at me, angry, trying hard to be brave and grown up, but also showing the fear and pain so clearly in his dark eyes, had Melanie sobbing louder and my knees shaking. Rather than take a chance with another collapse, I moved slowly to the tunnel wall across from Jeb and slid down to the floor. I curled up around my bent legs, trying to be as small as possible. Jamie watched me with cautious eyes and then took four slow steps forward until he stood over me. His glance flitted to Jeb, who hadn't moved or opened his eyes, and then Jamie knelt down at my side. His face was suddenly intense, and it made him look more adult than any expression yet. My heart throbbed for the sad man in the little boy's face. "You're not Melanie," he said in a low voice. It was harder not to speak to him because I was the one who wanted to speak. Instead, after a brief hesitation, I shook my head. "You're inside her body, though." Another pause, and I nodded. "What happened to your... to her face?" I shrugged. I didn't know what my face looked like, but I could imagine. "Who did this to you?" he pressed. With a hesitant finger, he almost touched the side of my neck. I held still, feeling no urge to cringe away from this hand.
"Aunt Maggie, Jared, and Ian,"
Jeb listed off in a bored voice. We both jumped at the sound. Jeb hadn't moved, and his eyes were still closed. He looked so peaceful, as if he had answered Jamie's question in his sleep. Jamie waited for a moment, then turned back to me with the same intense expression. "You're not Melanie, but you know all her memories and stuff, right?" I nodded again. "Do you know who I am?" I tried to swallow the words, but they slipped through my lips. "You're Jamie." I couldn't help how my voice wrapped around the name like a caress. He blinked, startled that I'd broken my silence. Then he nodded. "Right," he whispered back. We both looked at Jeb, who remained still, and back at each other.
"Then you remember what happened to her?" he asked.
I winced and then nodded slowly.
"I want to know," he whispered.
I shook my head.
"I want to know,"
Jamie repeated. His lips trembled.
"I'm not a kid. Tell me."
"It's not pleasant," I breathed, unable to stop myself. It was very hard to deny this boy what he wanted. His straight black eyebrows pulled together and up in the middle over his wide eyes.
"Please,"
he whispered. I glanced at Jeb. I thought that maybe he was peeking from between his lashes now, but I couldn't be sure. My voice was soft as breathing.
"Someone saw her go into a place that was off limits. They knew something was wrong. They called the Seekers."
He flinched at the title. "The Seekers tried to get her to surrender. She ran from them. When they had her cornered, she jumped into an open elevator shaft." I recoiled from the memory of pain, and Jamie's face went white under his tan.
"She didn't die?" he whispered.
"No. We have very skilled healers. They mended her quickly. Then they put me in her. They hoped I would be able to tell them how she had survived so long." I had not meant to say so much. My mouth snapped shut. Jamie didn't seem to notice my slip, but Jeb's eyes opened slowly and fixed on my face. No other part of him moved, and Jamie didn't see the change.
"Why didn't you let her die?" he asked.
He had to swallow hard. A sob was threatening in his voice. This was all the more painful to hear because it was not the sound a child makes, frightened of the unknown, but the fully comprehending agony of an adult. It was so hard not to reach out and put my hand on his cheek. I wanted to hug him to me and beg him not to be sad. I curled my hands into fists and tried to concentrate on his question. Jeb's eyes flickered to my hands and back to my face. "I wasn't in on the decision," I murmured. "I was still in a hibernation tank in deep space when that happened." Jamie blinked again in surprise. My answer was nothing he'd expected, and I could see him struggling with some new emotion. I glanced at Jeb. His eyes were bright with curiosity. The same curiosity, though more wary, won out with Jamie.
"Where were you coming from?" he asked.
In spite of myself, I smiled at his unwilling interest. "Far away. Another planet."
"What was..."
he started to ask, but he was interrupted by another question.
"What the hell?"
Jared shouted at us, frozen with fury in the act of rounding the corner at the end of the tunnel.
"Damn it, Jeb! We agreed not to..."
Jamie wrenched himself upright.
"Jeb didn't bring me here, but you should have."
Jeb sighed and got slowly to his feet. As he did so, the gun rolled from his lap onto the floor. It stopped only a few inches from me. I scooted away, uncomfortable. Jared had a different reaction. He lunged toward me, closing the length of the hallway in a few running strides. I cowered into the wall and covered my face with my arms. Peeking around my elbow, I watched him jerk the gun up from the floor.
"Are you trying to get us killed?"
he almost screamed at Jeb, shoving the gun into the old man's chest.
"Calm down, Jared,"
Jeb said in a tired voice. He took the gun in one hand.
"She wouldn't touch this thing if I left it down here alone with her all night. Can't you see that?"
He stabbed the barrel of the gun toward me, and I cringed away.
"She's no Seeker, this one." "Shut up, Jeb. Just shut up."
"Leave him alone," Jamie shouted. "He didn't do anything wrong."
"You,"
Jared shouted back, turning on the slim, angry figure.
"You get out of here now, or so help me."
Jamie balled his fists and stood his ground. Jared's fists came up too. I was rooted in place with shock. How could they scream at each other this way? They were family. The bonds between them stronger than any blood tie. Jared wouldn't hit Jamie. He couldn't. I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what to do. Anything that brought me to their attention would only make them angrier. For once, Melanie was calmer than I was. He can't hurt Jamie, she thought confidently. It's not possible. I looked at them, facing off like enemies, and panicked. We should never have come here. See how unhappy we've made them, I moaned.
You shouldn't have tried to keep this a secret from me, Jamie said between his teeth. And you shouldn't have hurt her.
One of his hands unclenched and flew out to point at my face. Jared spit on the floor.
That's not Melanie. She's never coming back, Jamie.
That's her face, Jamie insisted. And her neck. Don't the bruises there bother you?
Jared dropped his hands. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath.
You will either leave right now, Jamie, and give me some space, or I will make you leave. I am not bluffing. I can't deal with any more right now, okay? I'm at my limit. So can we please have this conversation later?
He opened his eyes again. They were full of pain. Jamie looked at him, and the anger drained slowly from his face.
Sorry, he muttered after a moment. I'll go. But I'm not promising that I won't come back.
I can't think about that now. Go, please.
Jamie shrugged. He threw one more searching look at me, and then he left, his quick, long stride making me ache again for the time I'd missed.
Jared looked at Jeb. You too, he said in a flat voice.
Jeb rolled his eyes.
I don't think you've had a long enough break, to be honest. I'll keep an eye on Go.
Jeb frowned thoughtfully.
Okay. Sure.
He started down the hall.
Jeb,
Jared called after him.
Yeah? If I asked you to shoot it right now, would you do it?
Jeb kept walking slowly, not looking at us, but his words were clear.
I'd have to. I follow my own rules. So don't ask me unless you really mean it.
He disappeared into the dark turn. Jared watched him go. Before he could turn his glower on me, I ducked into my uncomfortable sanctuary and curled up in the back corner. Chapter 18 Bored. I spent the rest of the day, with one brief exception, in total silence. That exception occurred when Jeb brought food for both Jared and me several hours later. As he set the tray inside the entrance to my tiny cave, he smiled at me apologetically. Thank you, I whispered.
You're welcome,
he told me. I heard Jared grunt, irritated by our small exchange. That was the only sound Jared made all day. I was sure he was out there, but there was never so much as an audible breath to confirm that conviction. It was a very long day, very cramped and very dull. I tried every position I could imagine, but I could never quite manage to get all of me stretched out comfortably at once. The small of my back began a steady throbbing. Melanie and I thought a lot about Jamie. Mostly we worried that we had damaged him by coming here, that we were injuring him now. What was a kept promise in comparison with that? Time lost meaning. It could have been sunset, it could have been dawn. I had no references here, buried in the earth. Melanie and I ran out of topics for discussion. We flipped through our joint memories apathetically, like switching TV channels without stopping to watch anything in particular. I napped once, but could not fall soundly asleep because I was so uncomfortable. When Jeb finally came back, I could have kissed his leathery face. He leaned into my cell with a grin stretching his cheeks.
About time for another walk?
He asked me. I nodded eagerly.
I'll do it, Jared growled. Give me the gun.
I hesitated, crouched awkwardly in the mouth of my cave, until Jeb nodded at me.
Go ahead, he told me.
I climbed out, stiff and unsteady, and took Jeb's offered hand to balance myself. Jared made a sound of revulsion and turned his face away. He was holding the gun tightly, his knuckles white over the barrel. I didn't like to see it in his hands. It bothered me more than it did with Jeb. Jared didn't make allowances for me the way Jeb had. He stalked off into the black tunnel without pausing for me to catch up. It was hard. He didn't make much noise and he didn't guide me, so I had to walk with one hand in front of my face and one hand on the wall, trying not to run into the rock. I fell twice on the uneven floor. Though he did not help me, he did wait till he could hear that I was on my feet again to continue. Once, hurrying through a straighter section of the tube, I got too close, and my searching hand touched his back, traced across the shape of his shoulders before I realized that I hadn't reached another wall. He jumped ahead, jerking out from under my fingers with an angry